Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with all of you today. I know this is a 20-minute timed event, and the first thing I will say, as someone who served in the Marine Corps, the first rule you learn in Marine Corps leadership is to never put your crowd's face into the sun, whether you're talking to Marines or citizens like you today. So I apologize very much for having to put you through being in the sun during this next 20 minutes. I've been here about an hour and a half. We just parked out in the parking lot and started walking through, saying hello to people. It's a great opportunity to meet people and listen to their views. And before I say anything else, I'd like to say also that I belong to, I think, one of the most unique fraternities in the world. It's a fraternity that you have to earn your way into. It goes across all geographical, political, business, ethnic lines in America, and that's the United States Marine Corps. And one of my great friends who served in my platoon in Vietnam is with us today. He's an Iowa citizen, Dan Brew. And he actually, you know, for those of us who were in the Marine Infantry during that period, it was a very brutal time, folks. We lost 3 times as many Marines in the Vietnam War as had been lost in the entire Korean War. And during the period that we were there in 1969, more Americans died. In fact, twice as many Americans died in Vietnam as have been lost in Iraq and Afghanistan combined in the last 12 years of the war. So it's always a great honor for me to be able to give my thanks to people who served with us. And yesterday was the anniversary of when Dan Brew was wounded. He was wounded twice, and so it's great to have Dan with us today. I also know that I was preceded by General George Washington, President Washington. I got to meet him backstage. I always wanted to meet General Washington because actually my 4 times great-grandfather served in the Virginia line during the American Revolutionary War under George Washington. He was at Valley Forge. Those of you who remember the encampments at Valley Forge across the Delaware, and General Washington reminded me of how much he appreciated his Virginia soldiers during that engagement. Also, was glad to see that Governor Huckabee preceded me. My mother was from Arkansas. I've been to Arkansas many, many times, and it's good to have his views in this election process. Folks, one thing I would like to say in this short period of time is that our country right now is going through a very emotional process when you look at all of the debate that's going on about issues that are bothering people and the attention that some of the candidates who are more on the extreme are getting in the media, and the way that people are trying to figure out where the country needs to go. And the one thing that I would ask you when you're looking at who you want for your next president is, when all of this calms down, when you're really going to have to make the choices about who you want as a commander-in-chief, who you want that has a record of judgment and getting things done across party lines, I hope you will take a look at what we have done during my professional career and the issues that we are trying to put in front of the country right now. You're going to need a commander-in-chief. The number one responsibility of the President of the United States is that burden of being your commander-in-chief and making these ultimate decisions about foreign policy and when to use military force and when it is wise not to use military force. I've been around the military my entire life. I grew up in the military. I was honored to serve as a Marine in Vietnam. I spent 5 years in the Pentagon, 1 as a Marine and 4 as a defense executive, an assistant secretary of defense and secretary of the Navy. I've covered the military as a journalist. In fact, I was in Beirut in 1983 when our Marines were in Beirut just before that bombing that killed more than 220 Americans in one day. I was in Afghanistan as an embedded journalist. And the experience that I have had in the Senate as a member of the Armed Services Committee and the Foreign Relations Committee, I think, is something that has prepared me in the best way that anyone can be prepared to be your Commander-in-Chief. The second thing I would like for you to think about is how are we going to make this a better country in terms of issues like economic fairness and social justice? I've been speaking about the breaking point between the people at the very top and our working people for 10 years now. It was one of the primary issues that I put into my Senate campaign in 06. It was the first issue that I addressed when I gave the State of the Union response to President Bush's State of the Union in 07. We have a long record here. We have to remember, we are the most unique society on earth. We are the greatest country on earth. We want to live the American dream. And the American dream has three pieces to it. The first is, if you have your ideas together, if you can get yourself into the process, you can shoot the moon. You can go all the way. We want to preserve that. The second point is, we're not doing our job right as your government leaders unless we insist that along that journey, everyone has absolute fairness. Everyone has absolute access to the American dream. And the third part of that is that for those who have fallen on hard times, for those who are in retirement, for those who've suffered disability, this country has always guaranteed a safety net under the people. It's the American trifecta, the dream at the top, fairness along the way, and the safety net under our people. I've heard people say that we have that system in place right now economically. I've heard other people say we've got five billionaires at the top who are controlling a lot of different parts of how our economic process works. And in a way, they're kind of both right. If you look back at this recession that we endured from 08 going into 09 and how we have climbed back out of it, in April 2009, when we started climbing back out of it, if you use that as a starting point, the stock market has almost tripled. It's gone from a little bit above 6,000, above 18,000, probably settled in the 17,000s right now. If you own stock, if you have capital assets, you're probably doing very well right now. At the same time, wages and salaries for our working people have been flat and actually have gone down, as have loans to small businesses. So if you're not in the flow of capital, of owning stocks, real estate, and those sorts of things, you're probably not doing very well right now. And we need to make sure that the American worker, who is the hardest, most productive worker in the world, gets a share of this economy as we bring it back. The one thing I can guarantee you, if you look at the record that I have put on the table over many years, in government and out of government, is that I can take complex problems, work with people from across the philosophical spectrum, and actually get things done. I'm very proud of the post-9/11 GI Bill. I wrote this bill, actually wrote it before I went into the Senate. I introduced it my first day in office, and we developed a leadership prototype as soon as I got to the Senate in terms of how you can work across the aisle and bring people together and solve the problem. This was not an easy lift. The Bush administration opposed this GI Bill, the greatest GI Bill in history, until the day it was signed. They thought it was going to cause too many people to leave the American military. The exact reverse occurred. But in 16 months, working with Republicans and Democrats together, we passed the greatest GI Bill in history. And now, more than a million of our post-9/11 GIs have been able to take advantage of an educational program that pays their tuition, buys their books, gives them a monthly stipend. That's what happens when you can get people together and solve problems. We did the same approach in terms of trying to solve our broken criminal justice system in this country. I started talking about this when I was running for the Senate. We spent 2.5 years of hearings, listening to different approaches from across the philosophical spectrum. We put this issue into the national debate, and we took a lot of hits along the way. But we got people across the philosophical spectrum. If you can imagine any issue in front of the United States Congress that has the support of the National Sheriff's Association, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, all the way over to the ACLU and the Marijuana Project, we pulled it off. We pulled it off by getting people to talk to each other about how to solve these problems. I can do that for you as your next president if you will support me, and particularly right here in Iowa. So thank you very much for being with us today. I'm not sure how much time we have left, but I have time to take questions. Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you for your service, first of all, Senator Webb. My question is, as a voter here in Iowa, I believe that children all across the world have the right to grow into their full potential. One of the ways that we can make a difference on that is by supporting early childhood nutrition and education. If elected president, would you commit to create a presidential initiative to fund programs for early childhood nutrition and education?
The question was about early childhood and would I sign an initiative as president for working for nutrition programs, education programs, et cetera. I'm not going to say right now that I will sign a petition to do anything, but I will tell you that I will focus on this problem. I don't sign pledges. I pledge that I will give you my leadership. Yes, sir. The question is, in the 20th century, who was my favorite president? And I'm going to have to say two. And this is, I don't know how what party you're in, but this is one on either side. Franklin Roosevelt, for what he did. My mother grew up in utter poverty in East Arkansas. She was one of eight children, three of whom died in childhood. Not childbirth, childhood. Her father died when she was 10 years old because there was no medical care after a fractured hip. Franklin Roosevelt stepped forward, put programs into place, created the TVA, put work out there. My grandmother could not work. There was nothing out there in this rural area after my grandfather died, but she finally got a job through one of the Roosevelt programs. Social Security. Anybody who, you know, back when Social Security was created, people were saying this was a socialist program. I doubt there's anybody out here who wants me to stop their Social Security check. I like mine. The other favorite is Ronald Reagan. I served in the Reagan administration. And I will tell you, the Reagan administration did a terrific job, whether you agree politically with them or not, of putting strong people into the administration, giving them guidance, and having them step forward and lead. And in a Webb administration, we will do that. We will bring the greatest minds in America to the table, give them direction as to where we want this country to go, and have them lead. Yes, sir. Okay, the question is, what would I do to get big money out of politics? Now, let me tell you, big money is having a very deleterious effect on our democracy, particularly since the Citizens United case. There is no question about it. The power of the financial sector to shape issues that are being debated right now. And I will say two things to you. First of all, I am unbought and I am unbossed. I do not, you know, I will listen to everyone, but I have my own mind. Everybody knows it if they see the entire trajectory of my career. And the second one is, if you don't like these super PACs, I don't have a super PAC, by the way. I hear people saying, I don't like the super PACs. I don't like the super PAC. The idea is you can only give me $2,700 for my election campaign, but you can walk across the street and write a check for $27 million in a super PAC. I think that's wrong. And you ought to be asking candidates, if you think that's wrong, why are you taking the money? And for all of you, I will say, if you want to change that, then vote with someone who won't do it. Which is me, by the way. I have not had a... Yes, right here.
How do you stand on the pipeline?
Okay, how do I stand on the pipeline? I support the pipeline. It has, if you look at it in terms of the environmental analysis, it is neutral. You can come here in the north of part of Iowa and watch these trains go down with all that oil in it and the accidents they're having, and the, think about the environmental degradation of having to haul the oil down in that way. So on balance, I think it's good. It's good for jobs, and you know, we are gaining the kind of independence that we need in terms of our energy sources. By the way, I'm all of the options above on energy, but I would support the pipeline. Yes, sir. The question is, do I support the renewable fuel standards? I support renewable energy. And I think Iowa is a perfect example of areas where it can work. I've visited a wind farm. I've gotten an explanation of how that works. I've visited an ethanol plant, and I'm very impressed not only with the ethanol program, but with the advances that they are making scientifically in terms of the type of stuff that was not being used. And by the way, I am a proponent of nuclear power. You know, I went to the Naval Academy. I saw the brightest minds in the Naval Academy in my class going into nuclear power. We have the safest nuclear power programs in the world. They're the best managed, and they are totally clean environmentally. Yes, sir.
So you talked a lot about how you were able to bring people together to solve problems. What do you do when people don't agree on what the problems are? How would you handle it in opposition?
Okay, the question is, what do you do? I talk about uniting our country, bringing people together. What do you do when people disagree with you? Well, the first thing you learn in any leadership position, whether it's the military or in business or in government, there's always people who are going to disagree with you. And we live in the most creative society in the world because we have our disagreements and we work them out and we solve problems. And trust me, I was elected in Virginia. I was a senator from Virginia. That is a demographic microcosm of the country. On any given day, on any issue, 40% of the people in Virginia are angry at the people who are leading them. You know, it could be the people from the far southwest who are, you know, very, very conservative socially and are coal, et cetera, or people in the north. So leadership is bringing people together and talking to them and figuring out ways that you can move forward. And I think we did that again and again on issues such as criminal justice and veterans issues. And what we need is a leader who will stand up, look toward the future, make the recommendations, and take the hits instead of playing it safe and trying to figure out which way this particular crowd would want to go. And that's what leadership's all about. Yes, sir.
AmeriCorps has been a success story for 20 years. Nearly a million men and women have served in AmeriCorps, yet again, Congress wants to cut it, this time by nearly half. If you're elected president, would you support the expansion of AmeriCorps and Senior Corps so that more Americans can rebuild our country?
The question's about AmeriCorps. What I would support, I'm not going to tell you that I would support the expansion of any particular program, but what I do support is finding ways to put young Americans into areas of public service that affect our infrastructure, that affect the degradations not only in the cities but in areas like the Appalachian Mountains. And I think we can do that. And by the way, when we talked about the early childhood program, in terms of education, let's remember two things. I only got 1 minute here. But let's remember two things. One is that only about 75% of our young people even finish high school today. And we are not focusing on that problem when we talk about all these educational incentives. How do we take that person who maybe when they get to be 28 or 30 years old, wants a ramp back up to get an education and provide valuable service to our country? And one of the ways that I think we can motivate younger people in this country is to get them involved in programs of community service that also address their need for education. I'm committed to that. I believe in it. And if you'll support me, we can do it. Thank you very much. My time, unfortunately, is up. Thank you.